Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening, and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Friday, June 22nd. And actually a reason on Thursday night to be excited about the Pistons' direction. And this is your boy, host Matt Shook, an AP writer out in Chicago, covering the NBA, also a Pistons follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thank you for the listen. Appreciate you picking us part of your daily routine, and apologies in advance today. I got some workers outside of the window here at the studio that are causing some background noise and some banging every now and then. Trust me, you're not as frustrated about it as I am as we record the podcast here on a Friday in the Windy City. Today we're going to be breaking down the Pistons' pair of second-round selections in Khyree Thomas and Bruce Brown, and also some thoughts from around the league on draft night. A pretty boring one, actually, all things considered. Maybe we were a little bit spoiled with the draft over the years, but I know we had some trades there, especially the number three for number five, and anytime you get a top five trade, that's a pretty exciting thing. But, you know, no current players dealt. All things considered, you know, no big juice like All-Stars and Jimmy Butler being traded last year and all the Kawhi stuff swirling, all the LeBron James talk. Nothing too big as far as huge news, huge generational news in the NBA, other than a really good class being selected and found out where they're going to be heading in the coming years. And also for Pistons playoff playback today, we're going to go back to 2005, the final game that we'll be detailing in our series. I hope you've enjoyed this look back at some old Pistons eras. Well, the Pistons went into the second round and got an impact wing that plays defense and exudes Detroit basketball toughness, and then they went and drafted another one. So the Pistons moved into the early second round with a trade with Philadelphia at 38, the eighth selection in the second round, selecting Khyree Thomas of Creighton, a shooting guard at 6'3". Like most of you, probably, I was guessing when you heard about this deal with Philadelphia that this was going to be a pick swap and that the Pistons would move up four spots, give Philly their 42nd pick, and then maybe offer like a second-round pick swap or a heavily protected second-round pick in the future, and that would be the deal. But even when the Pistons, and even when the Pistons made their pick at 42, I was still awaiting word about how that pick was eventually going to Philly, but that never came, never turned out, and the Pistons' 42nd pick, their own, stayed their own, and that was Bruce Brown Jr. for the Miami Hurricanes. And as it turned out, the 38th pick was acquired by the Pistons for two future second-round picks, which, given that Pistons fans are probably all a little bit excited about the players picked up in the second round, it's a fairly significant price for the Pistons to pay. But still, with Thomas, it feels like an appropriately steep price. I haven't looked ahead to the next few years of drafts to see if there's this kind of depth, and I know there's probably even the draft experts probably haven't gotten too deep into, you know, drafts a couple years from now at the 30, 40, 50 selections if they're too deep. So obviously tough to project whether those will be painful losses in the future or not. But we're going to run down the mock drafts here going into it as far as Khyree Thomas, a junior from Creighton. The Ringer had him going 36th in their final mock draft, and he went 38th, obviously. So credit to the Ringer for noticing the slide that Khyree Thomas was having in the last couple weeks and having him move down draft boards throughout the process. Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press in his last mock draft had the Khyree Thomas going 26th. David Aldridge of NBA.com and TNT, the former Philadelphia Inquirer, Washington Post reporter, he had, an NBA expert in every sense of the word. He had Khyree Thomas going number 20. Rod Beard of the Detroit News, in his only mock draft that he did, had Khyree Thomas going 18th. Now, that was about a week before the actual draft, so hard to tell if Rod Beard would have thought that maybe he was sliding from what he was hearing or what he was extrapolating from what his research entailed. Also, USA Today had the Khyree Thomas going 28th. So getting him at 36th, obviously a nice value for, 38th, obviously a nice value for the Pistons there. When you look at the experts, our own Locked On NBA mock draft that we did with the War Rooms with the different hosts. John Corrales and Jay King of Locked On Celtics had the Celtics taking Kyrie at 27, and they were ecstatic that he fell. And as I listened to that podcast actually on yesterday before the draft, I just kind of rolled my eyes and thought, man, they did it again. The damn Celtics are going to end up getting a smart pick at 27 and stockpiling those defensive wings. I wish my team did smart stuff like that. And then the Pistons went out and surprised me and did it. Now, more about Thomas. He's a Omaha, Nebraska guy, which is where Creighton is. It's in Omaha, Nebraska. He's from kind of a rougher part of the city, which does exist, by the way. I have seen it. And by the way, he did a year in prep school after high school, but wasn't super highly recruited. And he just kind of improved quite a bit year in and year out in his time for Doug McDermott's dad, Greg McDermott, who was the coach of the Creighton Blue Jays. Two-time Big East Defensive Player of the Year. Needs to work on his ball handling. Has improved it a little bit over the years, but still needs some work on his turnovers and ability to handle the ball as well. A high flyer at times offensively, some highlight reel dunks. Got 1.7 steals per game last year. And watching the highlights of Kyrie Thomas literally just taking the ball away from dudes very often, which is kind of next level stuff. You often see steals in the basketball and college and all pro basketball is, picking up garbage of loose balls or anticipating passes, getting lucky in a lot of situations, but wasn't the case for a lot of these here. My buddy Michael is a Creighton alum and a super fan in all sense of the words for the Creighton Blue Jays. He passed along a tweet from former Creighton teammate Tyler Clement, who tweeted yesterday, "On draft day, I think back to Kyrie Thomas' first open gym as a freshman 3 years ago. He picked me up full court right away, which most guys don't do, and I asked if he was going to press the whole game because I wasn't trying to run that much. I was being a lazy upperclassman. He said something along the lines of, 'Yep, I'm not giving anyone a break.' It showed his work ethic, what it was right away, and I remember thinking that this freshman's got a bright future." So that's former teammate Tyler Clement talking about Kyrie Thomas. Can you imagine going and obviously the summer runs at Creighton for the Division I Big East basketball team is a little bit different than your game at the Y. But can you imagine someone picking you up full court and just running you up and down 90 feet at the Y? That would probably get pretty annoying, but shows the character and the defensive tenacity and what Kyrie Thomas believes in as a basketball player. A knockdown spot-up shooter as well. A guy who's been, I think he had made 41% of his threes. And really, as you mentioned, we talked about the wings and the type of players that were going late in the first round, early in the second round. It was kind of your choice of flavors that you wanted there in the draft. And for whatever reason, Thomas wasn't that guy for so many teams. Some of the other negatives, as I mentioned, including the ball handling, include the fact that he's already 22 years old. So when you look at projectables, if teams might have figured that maybe Thomas was more of a finished product than a lot of the other guys that they could develop on their own, 19, 20 years old. A lot of those other wings that were out there. And rightfully so in some of that opinions. You should try to, have your age, spend your age, your age 20 year, your age 21 year developing as a full-time basketball player in the league more than just hanging out on campus. And that's not an option for many guys. And the fact that Kyrie didn't get into the league until 22 is something it's a negative these days when you look at it. I mean, it might sound counterintuitive to some of you to have a more finished product and more advanced age guy, but that's the world we're living in now. So that's what it is as far as draft projections and players you want in the NBA in the draft. So, okay, we're moving on next to Bruce Brown. Looking at it, he was a sophomore coming out of Miami, shooting guard as well. The Ringer had him going 31, so actually had him going higher than Kyrie Thomas. And Vince Ellis of the Free Press had him going 29th in his first-round mock draft. Aldridge, Rod Beard, and USA Today, those three publications that I looked at, only did first-round mock drafts, and they had him not getting selected as part of their first 30 picks there. So pretty consistent as far as being a very high first-round, possibly very low, very high second-round, possibly very low first-round pick. And Brown slips a little bit over there to 42 where the Pistons were able to get him. Bruce Brown is actually about an inch taller than Kyrie Thomas at 6'5". And also almost 22, so only a few months younger than Kyrie Thomas. And that's another indication that the Pistons want help on the wing right now, as they should, which we knew. So these types of picks make sense in terms of needs. So the reason that those guys fell a little bit to the Pistons at 38 and 42 are also some of the reasons that the Pistons might covet them ahead of some of the other teams that needed some of those wings. Good teams could take those project guys and wait on them. Anfernee Simons from IMG Academy to Portland is one of the examples of that, although they probably needed a little bit more wing help than they did taking the high school guy. But, you know, that guy, by the way, he looks like he's about 14 years old, but he's smooth. And teams like Portland maybe can wait on him or have to wait on him now as he develops into an NBA type of body, an NBA type of athlete. But with Bruce Brown, he had a better freshman season than sophomore season. And then that culminated with a foot injury that required surgery, shut down his season early, and really paved the way for Lonnie Walker the fourth to kind of take a bigger step forward for his projections. He was kind of a more highly touted freshman for Miami who kind of took the reins after Bruce Brown got hurt, played his way into a first-round pick for the San Antonio Spurs there. Brown improved in his rebounding and defense along the way, but just not his shooting. He was a 26.7% three-point shooter for Miami last season and a 62.9% free throw shooter. As you hear the banging there in the background, free throw shooting is kind of the new three-point shooting when you look at some of the writers and scouts as far as their projections. It's shown over the years that a good college free throw shooter has the fundamentals and touch and feel on the shot where they can develop into more of a three-point shooter. So that's how you kind of can develop their or look at those projections in some ways. And Brown doesn't have that. Like I said, a 62.9% free throw shooter. So it shows that maybe he doesn't have that ability and touch on his shot to develop. So we will see how that goes and some quirky mechanics as well. But maybe you can wholesale change that and work with that. That's going to be Dwayne Casey's charge and those kind of things with player development. He's been lauded for those things in the past. So go earn that $7 million and try to turn Bruce Brown into a passable NBA shooter. And these are the second round guys. Keep that in mind. I mean, the fact is, if one of these guys sticks around as a rotation dude for 6, 7, 8 years, it's a win. You take two stabs at it and see how it works. Both of these guys have a chance, and that's what you're all you're asking for out of your second-round pick. And you heard me say it over the last couple months. I want tough Detroit Pistons, and these guys are that. So if I'm going to come on this podcast every day and demand that, I have to give credit where credit is due. Ed Stefanski, a Philly guy, he seems to get it from that perspective and seems to want to build this team the right way, understanding this franchise and what it should be about. So I gave the Thomas pick an A for the Detroit News. I did the grading the draft picks in the first round and also the Pistons picks. You can check that out on DetroitNews.com, by the way, in a photo gallery. And I gave the Bruce Brown pick a B+. So overall, I mean, I don't know. I guess an A-, A. You're kind of splitting hairs at this point, but very good from my perspective here the day after the draft. But if we're all being honest, and if I'm being honest, the draft grades the night of the draft and even the day after the draft and, of course, even the week after the draft, not the most telling things. It's kind of an exercise in futility in some ways. But still, check it out, DetroitNews.com. Check out that article. But, you know, the more telling way to analyze this draft comes years down the road, but that's not interesting. That's not as fun as talking about what we think about what happened last night. But we're going to, speaking about going around and talking about what happened last night, we're going to go around the league a little bit, talk about the winners and the losers from Thursday nights. But speaking of winners, if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, then you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 and 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we've got reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Later on, we will go back for our final segment of Pistons playoff playback. Since we couldn't live in the present, we will relive the past a little bit. And like I said, this draft this year, kind of a bore compared to some of the other ones we've had in the past, despite a talented rookie class believed to be coming into the NBA. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN.com, Woj, couldn't help himself from tipping those picks, probably fueled by guys like Mark Stein and Sham Sharnia of Yahoo and the New York Times, wanted to stay up with that competition. And I know everyone is laughing at the whole thing, but I don't want to be someone who puts a damper on everything that people enjoy. But I think ESPN and the NBA had their reasons for stopping him, and it's obvious. It hurts the entertainment value of the night. No surprises, really, when you know who's coming and who's being picked. He tipped the first six picks a couple hours before the draft, so we knew who those first six guys would be if you were paying attention. We also knew that the Trae Young for Luka Doncic trade was coming well before it actually happened, and since it was a trade, wasn't a trade for any current players, it's just like, it's kind of like Doncic just fell in the draft to five, and Young went up to three. So from a viewer standpoint, that wasn't really the most exciting thing out there. I love the move for Dallas, getting Doncic like everyone else pretty much does. I don't quite love the Philly trade that they made later on with Mikal Bridges and Zaire Smith. I feel, obviously, like everyone else, I feel bad for Mikal Bridges, first of all, you know, with his mom being the human resources representative for the ownership group of the Philadelphia 76ers. Seemed like a great story there. But every mock draft you ever saw leading up to the draft had Bridges going 10 to Philly. Just seemed like to make a whole lot of sense. A guy ready to play right now for a team that's going to be in the playoffs again for years to come. A shooter to put alongside Ben Simmons. And now they get another project there in Zaire Smith from Texas Tech. A lot of the draft people, they love him. But again, we'll see down the road there how that turns out. A defensive player, an athlete who's not much of an offensive player so far. We will see. Time will tell. At some point, you got to take some safe picks, though, if you're a team that needs to add some talent. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Zaire Smith turns into an all-star or an all-defensive team type of player, and Philadelphia continues to build on their foundation of young talent that they have right now. Another team that everyone likes as far as the analysts that I didn't really like is what Atlanta did. Everyone's talking about the Steph Curry comparisons with Trae Young, and then Kevin Huerter is the Klay Thompson clone and all that stuff, although clearly not the defender that Klay Thompson is. And Trae Young, clearly not the offensive dynamite player that Steph Curry is, plus a questionable defensive player. I'd say more Trash Brothers than Splash Brothers so far. Nothing to get too excited about with that backcourt in Atlanta as far as I'm concerned. And if they're trying to build a carbon copy of Golden State, and that's where GM Travis Schlenk comes from, but the reason that Golden State is Golden State is that they have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. It's not, you know, reasonable facsimiles of those guys or even reaches as far as imitations of those guys. And Kevin Durant, obviously, a huge part of that mix and has been the last couple years. And it's not like they've unlocked this amazing system or amazing style of play. Sure, they share the ball a lot better than a lot of teams out there, but they're just very talented. They're just the best team as far as their talent level. So to get guys that are imitations of those guys, I don't know that that's necessarily the way to build it. The best way to build what Golden State has is to get very talented players as well, in my opinion. And Stan Van Gundy used to say it's a perimeter league, and he was always asked about that. But he said, does that mean you go get the third-tier perimeter guys just because it's a perimeter league and then try to beat Golden State and Houston at their own game? Or do you try to maybe zig a little bit when everyone zags, maybe invest in the post a little bit? And obviously, Stan Van Gundy and the Pistons during his time maybe took that a little bit too far. But it's not as black and white of a question as it sounds. Do you go after, you know, perimeter players or post players? And there's overlap in what all teams are trying to do with the NBA in terms of the propensity of three-point shooting and all that stuff. But it's a philosophical big picture question to keep an eye on. Also, some later in the draft, some flyers from Denver and Boston that I really like to get a high lottery talent in Michael Porter Jr. at 14, and then for Boston to get a low lottery talent like Robert Williams at 27. You know, you love those kind of value picks, even with the risk with Porter in particular, especially on pretty good teams already that, you know, can afford to wait and see what they have, maybe even sit out Porter for a lot of his rookie season or maybe his entire rookie season, try to get him as healthy as you possibly can, and ultimately maybe even absorb the losses if the moves are failures and those things don't work out. So the types of teams that Denver and Boston are in terms of talent level allows them to make those risks and maybe could propel them to being even better teams than they are right now. Some other opinions I had, the way that the board shook down, kind of the parity that we saw between picks, you know, 18 or so and 40, 45 or so, meant that there was not a lot of movement. None of the slides, like, for instance, DeAnthony Melton, who was a guy that I hoped that the Pistons would target at 42, he ended up going 46 to the Rockets. A good player, but was held out a year from USC. Mike Williams, by the way. How about that memory of players held out a year from USC? But with Melton, it was because of the FBI scandal in college basketball. So it makes sense that he'd slide a little bit there. But none of those things were that big of a story because while he was projected at possibly being a late first-round pick, slid all the way to 46, you know, the reaches weren't as big a reach as the slides weren't as big of a pronounced slide. Reaches like, you know, Philadelphia taking Landry Shamet in the first round out of Wichita State wasn't that huge of a reach. The guy has got projectable skills for the NBA, a good shooter, and pretty a solid player, had characteristics that you could believe in as a first-round guy. So it was kind of pick your poison or your flavor of the week that you like there in terms of those late first-round, early second-round picks. And we'll see how the Pistons scouting department that was, you know, a ragtag group of maybe fired, maybe kept guys from the old regime. It seems like they kind of did their due diligence and picked up some players that were highly coveted, at least in the lead up to the NBA draft, being some, you know, late first round pick projections that the Pistons were able to get early on in the second round, even into the mid to the second round with the 42nd pick. But we'll be going back to Pistons playoff playback, some better times as far as Pistons fans go, since we can't live in that present or couldn't live in the present with the playoff season this year. We will relive the past with the going to work era here on Lockdown Pistons. Once again, sincere apologies for all the banging that's going on outside the studio here. Appreciate your patience with that. We won't have those problems, hopefully, going forward. But going back to today in Pistons playoff playback, June 23rd, 2005. This is 13 years ago on Saturday, 13 years ago tomorrow. The deepest in the calendar that the Pistons ever went is June 23rd, and the second deepest in the calendar that any team or any game ever went in NBA history. June 28th was the NBA draft that year, so the draft was 5 days after Game 7, and the Pistons Spurs ended the NBA Finals there. The longest that the NBA calendar ever went was 1999, and that was June 25th, my mom's birthday, which is Monday. So happy birthday, Mom, in advance of that. And that was Game 5, the lockout year, where the Spurs and the Knicks played in the finals there. So obviously with that season being pushed back, that would make sense that it went that deep into the calendar. So a non-lockout year, the Pistons game against the Spurs on June 23rd, 2005, was the deepest in the calendar that the NBA season ever went. Fun fact right there. Back to Detroit, that big Game 6 win in San Antonio that we talked about yesterday sets up the Game 7 showdown. I was living in Lansing that summer interning for the Lansing State Journal, and I remember I had it on my mind the entire day. I wasn't productive at all at the internship. Sorry for the Lansing State Journal for that day. But the Pistons gave it a nice fight that night at the Alamo Dome. Pistons lost 81-74. As they all were back then, a low-scoring game, 18-16 after one quarter. Then the Pistons take the one-point lead at the half. Teams tied going into the fourth quarter, but Manu Ginobili made the big plays. He had 23 points. Timmy Duncan, 25 points and 11 rebounds for the Spurs. Robert Horry had 15 points off the bench. That guy didn't quit. The Pistons spread the scoring out, what little that there was. 15 points for Rip Hamilton, a pretty pedestrian, plodding game in terms of game sevens. Every possession matters. It's tense, but it's great. I like those kind of games once a season to kind of see the nerves come out, the importance on every possession, like you see in all pretty much all playoff basketball, but especially, you know, a game seven of the NBA Finals. No one wants to make those big mistakes. But the difference with that was that Manu was able to make a few more of those transition plays, a few more of the 50-50 plays. And the Spurs had it that night, while the Pistons didn't. The big stat that jumps out to you, the Pistons were 2 of 14 from three-point land, so choked a little bit in terms of the shooting. So if you're looking for the biggest culprit from the Pistons' standpoint, that was probably it. The move was a big transition for the Pistons going forward. Coach Larry Brown would coach his final game with the Pistons at Game 7 there. He would be gone. The draft would bring Jason Maxiel and Amir Johnson and Alex Acker into the fold for the Pistons. Amir Johnson, by the way, number 56 pick in the draft. So as we're talking about the second round picks on our mind after last night, important to remember that a talented and quality veteran NBA player like Amir Johnson went at 56. So they are out there, to be sure. Going forward, Carlos Delfino would get a bigger role. Maurice Evans was brought in along with Tony Delk in free agency. Eldon Campbell was replaced by Dale Davis in free agency as well. Dale Davis at 36 years old on the downside would have liked to maybe see, instead of just the project with Jason Maxiel and the old guy and Dale Davis, would have been nice to instead bring a guy who could have contributed right away off the bench for the Pistons going forward. But it wouldn't happen, and that would be the end, the last time that these Pistons, this Pistons franchise, would play in the NBA Finals until present day, when we're looking at probably years ahead of now that the Pistons might return to the NBA Finals. So that's been our look at Pistons playoff playback. I hope you've enjoyed the series. Give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Give us a follow on the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Check out the Facebook page, Locked On Pistons-MattShook. And the draft is now behind us. We'll have, you know, a new era of the offseason here on Locked On Pistons going forward. We'll be obviously looking ahead to free agency. The league year opens on July 1st. So next week we'll be spending some time looking back on the draft, looking ahead to free agency a little bit as well. Maybe we'll have some more hot new NBA rumors to look at, and we'll get some more exciting guests to talk to next week as well, and throughout July, throughout August. We've got a long slog coming up. These are the dog days that we're entering after free agency's burst of excitement opens the start of the summer, but we will see some ways to fill up the content going forward. But thanks for staying with us this summer. Thanks to listening here. This is your host, Matt Shook of Locked On Pistons, and enjoy the weekend, everyone.